Police officer, I locked somebody up for a criminal offense and they said, I didn't know that was against the law. There are a lot of other concerns involved with fair housing. Ultimately, it really does mean to be fair to all people. Here are a couple of examples of some things some investors may not immediately associate with fair housing. Steering. Trying to persuade tenants to go to a certain neighborhood or preventing them from going to a particular neighborhood. Available units. Not showing all available units to prospective tenants or disclosing all available units. Qualifying standards. You should have written qualifying standards for your property. For more details and complete information straight from the horse's mouth, go online to www.hud.gov. A must. Make sure this equal housing opportunity is plastered all over your forms. Put it in your application, rental agreement, move-in and outs, and even the front door and wall of your office and your website. In my town, this is a very huge concern of enforcement officers. This logo is available for free on my website at www.mikebutler.com, and you can get it free from HUD's website, too. ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act. For information on the housing concerns involving the Americans with Disabilities Act, visit www.hud.gov. Some of the highlights involve service animals, not pets. Previously, you and I would think of dogs as pets, and if a person has a medical necessity for an animal of some kind, it can be labeled a service animal and not a pet. You might put yourself in a legal quagmire if you have a no-pet policy and refuse to rent to an applicant who has a dog for medical reasons, such as a service animal. Another highlight involves the applicant's or tenant's request and desire to make the unit handicap accessible. For example, your tenant in a wheelchair wants to widen the doorways, lower the bathroom and kitchen countertops, and perhaps install a ramp. The ADA pretty much says you must allow your tenant to make these changes at their expense, providing they return your unit to its original condition when they move out. My experience has been great. Most of the time, these residents do great improvements. As expected, many install a handicap ramp in front or rear. It's up to you to keep it or have them remove it when they move out. The reason I bring this up now is that most rental agreements forbid the tenants from altering or making structural changes to the property. Once again, if this is a disabled person, you might be in violation of the ADA if you stick to your guns and forbid this request from your disabled tenant. Ignorance of the law is not an excuse. Resources needed. I highly recommend you to upload all federal and local fair housing PDFs into your electronic devices for quick, easy reference, especially when you begin to delegate some tasks of getting your vacant rentals filled yesterday. Resources needed. Here's how you can make this happen without any paper. Gmail, Google Voice and Texts, ACR cell phone app, all call recording. Chapter 3. Before you turn on your smartphone. Real estate investing is not fire, ready, aim. Just like any investment opportunity or business, you must do your homework before you pull the trigger, or you could end up poorer. One of my one-on-one mentoring students, who wants to keep his name private, had attended a Saturday morning pep rally at a big hotel ballroom hosted by a guru. He drank their Kool-Aid, hook, line, and sinker, and enrolled in a $30,000-plus coaching program. He found a big old house, similar to the Herman Munster house that had been chopped up into 7 apartments. Before buying this money pit, he ran it by his coaching expert. Together, he and his coach ran the numbers, and his high-dollar coach told him to do it. His coach said it was a killer deal. The investor ended up buying this huge monster, and it turned his life upside down. Trying to run down tenants to pay rent, repairs, fights, unauthorized occupants, and so much more. In fact, it was eating up so much of his time, he almost decided to throw in the towel and say piss on real estate. It was at this time when he discovered me. He had purchased my book, liked what he read, and scheduled a one-on-one coaching session with me. Today, he vividly remembers what he was told in our very first meeting. Not only did he waste over $30,000 on this BS coaching program, he had also lost tens of thousands of dollars on a POS property. I told him to sell this time-eating and money-eating monster yesterday, even if it meant taking a loss. All in all, this experience was his biggest seminar in the School of Hard Knocks. Now he does all nice single-family houses, and life is good. Today, he's a multimillionaire, is unemployable, and enjoys a boatload of family time, including coaching ball teams and more. In fact, he's taking his family on a 2-month vacation, traveling all over the United States for an adventure they will never forget. All because he learned how to ready, aim, fire, instead of fire, ready, aim. Here's your biggest challenge in this department. You must figure out how to find that line that balances paralysis of analysis against the Nike slogan, just do it. Just to rattle off some things to learn before pulling the trigger. What town to invest, property taxes, landlord friendly, and so forth. What kinds of properties? Risks? Benefits? Take a few super successful self-made investors to lunch and ask, knowing what you know today, what would you do if you started now? What are your biggest mistakes, and include those you have seen before? What is your goal for this year? What is your 3 to 5 year goal? Taxes and entity structures. Tax benefits? Asset protection and structure. Rules, laws, and more involved with real estate investing. Choosing the right systems, tools, resources for your business. The list could go on, but you get the big picture here. You must remember there is no overnight magic pill for superstar success investing in real estate. It does require some work on your part. Knowledge gives you power to make your efforts more efficient and profitable. There is no such thing as a free lunch. Every single superstar investor that I admire and respect always had education as part of their annual budget for their business. No different from advertising, utilities, insurance, property taxes, and so on, they all had an annual budget for education to sharpen their saw every year. This includes newsletters, live training events, memberships, and mastermind groups. This is how you can grow your real estate business quickly and safely. Learning from high-quality experts who have been there and done that. The main reason they are experts is because they have made more mistakes than anyone else, and this includes me too. Beginner basics of autopilot landlording. You must keep the big picture in perspective. Just like Dr. Steve Covey reminds us and shows us how we stay busy doing things urgent and not important, and things not urgent and not important, I hope to show you and keep you focused on his Quadrant 2 stuff, the important but not urgent things. If you can keep the big picture in perspective, it'll really help you to have the patience along with the motivation to implement your systems to put your landlording on autopilot. A huge part of this process is attitude, philosophy, and understanding what you, the investor, really want from your real estate investments. I screwed up many, many times during the first half of my investing career because I didn't have a clue about my ultimate goal. Sure, I realized owning real estate was good, but I operated with that Nike attitude of just do it. So many times I bought property and did things that did not move me forward toward my ultimate objective. Call it busy work or a waste of time. Sure, it may have made some money or profit at the time, but some activities really steal our time from pursuing and achieving our investment goals quickly. These beginner basics are the culmination of the many things I've learned from speakers and investors from all over the country, along with some tweaking of my own. In short, one of my instructors made the following comment I've never forgotten. Are you stepping over dollars to pick up nickels? To achieve true financial freedom, you have to shake the blinders off your head. Blinders are those things horses wear on their head to prevent peripheral vision during horse races. Don't worry, you are not alone on this. We all have this big handicap, including me. You might have heard others refer to this same concept as your comfort zone. Let me give you an example. My dad taught me how to change the oil in his truck so I could learn how to save money. After I purchased my first home, my dad told me about my aunt who was getting a brand new dishwasher installed in her kitchen. This aunt asked my dad if Mike would be interested in getting her old broken dishwasher. My dad gladly volunteered us to go get this broken dishwasher. Next step, my dad and me tore apart this broken dishwasher to see what was broken. After an hour or two, my dad found the broken part. Then we drove up to the handyman appliance parts store and bought some kind of metal part for $12. We returned to my home, installed the part, and put the broken dishwasher back together. Altogether, this took us over 6 hours to do, and I spent $12. Or, to use my dad's mindset, I just got a new used dishwasher for $12. Odds are you were probably raised this way too. Most self-made millionaires and multimillionaires were raised this way also. This whole idea of using your hands, your back, and trading your hours for dollars is wrong. What you have between your ears, up there in your noggin, is your true wealth creator. Remember this rule. Because you own it, it makes you money. This is a very hard thing for me to shake, even today. Big lesson learned. Let me tell you about the time I paid $19,800 to paint 5 rooms in a house. True story. Once upon a time, in a town far, far away, Louisville, Kentucky, I bought my 5th rental house. Thinking I was smart and knew how to save money, I decided to paint all 5 rooms in this house on my day off, to save money. How much money? At that time, I could get these 5 rooms painted for about $180 in labor plus the cost of the paint. I got up bright and early on my day off to make this happen early. I was in front of the paint store anxiously waiting for the store to open at 7 a.m. I got my paint and made a beeline to the house. I pop open the paint buckets and start slinging paint fast and furious using a roller. Everything is getting painted the same color. Walls, ceilings, woodwork, absolutely everything. My goal was to get the inside of this puppy painted in about 5 hours or less so I could go home and enjoy my off day with my family. As you recall, I had a full-time job and I was also on the bomb squad for more adventure and fun. In those days, I carried a weird pager that let me know I had messages on my old answering machine. That machine had 2 audio cassettes with TV tuner dials. My pager started blowing up while I was painting these 5 rooms. I was not budging until I got all 5 rooms painted, period. No exceptions. True to my own word, I did get all 5 rooms painted in less than 5 hours, locked up the house, and headed home. Once I arrived home, I kissed my wife on the cheek and told her I had to check the messages downstairs in our office. Our office was a piece of carpet scooted over in the corner of our unfinished basement with a used desk and some milk crates and shoeboxes. I turned the dial to rewind the audio cassette tape to begin playing the messages left on my answering machine. My dad was on there a time or two, and my good friend and fellow investor Jay Long left a very excited message, too. Now, Jay was a 23-year-old full-time investor who lived at home with his parents. His dad paid for his truck and car insurance, and his mom did all of his laundry. I was married with 2 daughters, and my wife was in nursing school. Jay's message was something like, "Hey, Mike, remember the wholesaling boot camp we went to? Well, it looks like it works, and I just made $20,000 in about 90 minutes today." I had to call Jay right away because we were both pumped up about our real estate investing, and we were attending boot camps and seminars all over the country. Jay proceeded to tell me about a lady who called from his classified ad in the newspaper. He told me she just wanted to unload her house and move to Florida next week to be with her daughter. Jay really did not like and did not want this big old house, but he made her a ridiculous offer and she said yes. Jay's jaw dropped mentally. After gathering his composure, he then contacted a local investor who pays cash for investment property. Jay had this guy meet him at this lady's house and pose as Jay's contractor in order to do a walkthrough and inspect the house. This local investor made Jay an all-cash offer of $20,000 more than Jay's contract with the lady selling her house. It all happened and closed within 5 days. I had all kinds of weird feelings for my buddy Jay. Yes, I was jealous, but I would much rather see him get this killer deal than some other lame investor in our town. Congrats to Jay. Now it is time for my jaw to drop. I then played the last message on my answering machine. It was from 8:30 a.m. the same morning. A lady called me because she knew I was buying houses. She stated she was moving to Florida next week to be with her daughter, and she wanted to sell her house today. She also told me that she would wait for my call until 12 noon, and at that time she would start calling the classified ads that said we buy houses. Oh, no. This was the very same lady who sold her house to Jay. I was madder than a mashed duck. Sure, I probably belted a few choice words and said never, never, never again would I swing a hammer, pick up a paintbrush, or do any physical labor on an investment property again. That paint job ultimately cost me $19,820 to paint 5 rooms in that house. Remember, I could have hired it out for $180. So dumb on my part. Needless to say, I have never worked on any investment property since. Please learn from my school of hard knocks, and I want you to do the same. Part 2. You must identify your tools, resources, and your team of experts before you pull the trigger launching your real estate investing career. This does not mean you have to go balls to the wall spending a lot of money before you get started. But you should know all of these things so you can grow your rentals quickly, efficiently, and safely. Once you have made the big decision that real estate is your ticket to true financial freedom, here's my short list of the basic recommendations. If you have made this decision, it is okay to go buy a house and get your feet wet and see if you like it. 1. Office operations, bookkeeping, and tax time. 2. Join your local real estate investment association, or REIA group, to network, learn local laws, and find experts and resources. Find real estate investing expert attorney who owns investment property like you. 4. Find real estate investing expert CPA who owns investment property like you. 5. Find a real estate investing expert insurance agent who owns investment property like you. 6. Learn how to find honest, reputable handyman and contractors. Although I have not used them yet, I know many investors use the free service www.homeadvisor.com. 7. Make quality education a big priority in your business. 8. Take your time to create a company name you love. It will become your pride and joy. It must be very short and to the point. Also, create an effective slogan that clearly explains how your business can help your targeted audience. Example, my company name is Vista, and my slogan, "We buy houses, we rent homes." 9. Business cards must be effective. 10. Smartphone. I personally prefer Androids and using the Samsung Note 8 Plus. Make sure you load your desktop, tablet, laptop, and smartphone with all of the great free apps for investors. Check with other investors and see what they are using and recommend. These are always changing. Today you hold a very powerful database of information inside your phone. One I like is www.redfin.com. Another one is www.zillow.com. There are tons more free stuff, but this is kind of the basics to get you started. As you grow your business, you will have more things to implement. If you noticed, I did not recommend LLCs, corporations, partnerships, and so on. Why? Because these are not free. Get your feet wet first. Resources needed. To operate your business from your smartphone, here is what you need to make it happen. Desktop PC at home and turned on 24/7 with TeamViewer installed on all devices. Website. It must be effective and interactive. Your other electronic devices, tablet, smartwatch, and whatever else. Chapter 4. Never, never call yourself a landlord. This chapter will definitely ruffle some feathers. I'm going to chop up some very sacred ground in the area of operating rental property. Hang in there, though, until the end to see the big picture and where you fit in. It's your choice. Let's get started with a simple but very challenging issue. Landlord. Just say the word out loud to yourself. Seriously, just do it. Just say landlord. Is this a friendly word? Is it a good word? What kinds of feelings or opinions do you associate with this word, landlord? What do others, the public, think about this word, landlord? What does it imply? My gut feeling tells me this word, landlord, is totally negative. The word simply sounds bad. It sounds evil, doesn't it? Remember Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live did a skit similar to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood with a slogan or catchphrase of, "Kill my landlord! Kill my landlord!" There's just a huge number of totally negative, bad, and evil connotations associated with this word. Another misconception that's almost impossible to shake is landlords have deep pockets. It doesn't matter a hill of beans whether this landlord is an aggressive, honest entrepreneur trying to do something good and positive in the neighborhood or town. This title can touch some very sensitive personal issues. I know. It did with me, too. Stupid move on my part. Here's where I screwed up big time. I took pride in identifying myself as the boss, owner, their landlord, the guy with the authority to make the decisions and call the shots. This also happened to come pretty darn easy and convenient because I was sort of already groomed for this as a cop. Solution. This answer is amazingly simple. Never identify yourself as the owner, real estate investor, or worse, landlord. The simple answer is to identify yourself as the property manager. Or better yet, identify yourself as a person who works for the property manager. This powerful, stuck-in-the-middle position allows you a boatload of flexibility to dodge all kinds of bullets. These two words give you an easy out to avoid making rash, shoot-from-the-hip decisions that may be emotionally charged or you may regret later. Don't freak out. In public, you can be the person who works for the property manager, while behind the scenes, you really still are the owner. Here are two powerful examples to save you money and some grief. The late charge story. Your phone rings. Tenant. Hello, John? This is Sally at 123 Main Street. I know I'm late with this month's rent, and I know it was due last Tuesday. My rent is $900, but Bill fell down while walking home from the bar last week and busted his head and hasn't been working since. I've got $900 now, but not enough for the late charge. It's okay, John, if you'll let us pay $900 to get caught up, right? Your new answer. Wow, I'm sure sorry about Bill and your situation, Sally. However, I just work for the property manager, and I do not have the authority to do what you want. There are rules and policies I've got to follow, or I'll get in trouble. Only the property manager, with approval from the owner, can make exceptions to the rules. If legal in your town, I highly recommend you implement a daily late charge. In my business, rent is due on or before the first of the month. It is late on the second. Our late charge is 10% of their monthly rent. On the third day of the month, our daily late charge kicks in, $5 per day. Imagine, if you will, a tenant who has a $1,000 monthly rent due on or before the first of the month. They finally pay their rent on the 12th of the month. Here is what happens. 1. $100 late charge. Rent not received on the first. 2. $50 in daily late charges. $5 per day times 10 days. Your daily late charges are powerful because you can use them to protect your late charges. My resident manager does have some authority to waive some of the daily late charges, but never the 10% late charge. Because the property manager does have some kindness in her heart, she agreed to waive your daily late charges. Most of the time, your great residents are happy with this and continue to gladly pay your 10% late charge. Note. When you remove yourself from the face-to-face contact and go 100% digital, it makes you look more professional and actually protects you and your business more. No more painful, long-winded phone calls. The local inspector. This scenario is just as valuable, perhaps maybe more. It doesn't matter if it involves a Section 8 tenant or a straight rental unit with a tenant. Suppose you receive a notice or a citation of some kind of a violation involving one of your properties. In dealing with local government agencies, we learned the easiest and simplest way to handle problems is to allow this individual at the government agency to believe they have the authority. Let the inspector believe they are all knowledgeable, they are the wizard, and they have the power. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? So, you've received your notice, and you telephone the inspector or contact person listed on the notice or violation. Tell them you received this notice from them and you would like or appreciate any assistance of help they may be able to give you because you work for the property manager. Some of our local inspectors, especially in the Section 8 arena, have attitudes toward investors and have made comments like they've made investors so-and-so wealthy because of their inspections. Perhaps they're jealous or envious of investors because they don't have the desire or motivation to get off their butt and become an investor too. When you present yourself as the poor old person who just works for the property manager and is stuck in the middle between the tenant and those greedy old tightwad owner-investor landlords, the inspector generally opens up and offers a helping hand, or at minimum, a helping attitude. Here comes the great part. Having a conversation with you as this person who works for the property manager gives you the insulation and space to avoid having to answer or make an on-the-spot decision. You have no authority. Even as a property manager, you give yourself the luxury and benefit of deferring all questions and all situations to the owner. The owner can be yourself, it can be your spouse. As a property manager, allows you the golden opportunity to pass the buck when placed in a tight spot unexpectedly. It also allows you the opportunity to avoid being the bad guy by making the owner the bad guy. Your benefit is avoiding making a decision you will regret later. Most of these bad decisions are made from your heart and not your bank account. When you are not the landlord and you have zero authority because you work for the property manager, you are in a very sweet spot to say, "I don't have the authority to do that, but I will talk with my property manager and will get back to you." Now you can schedule a meeting for tomorrow morning with yourself, your property manager, and the owner, all three at the same time, in your bathroom shower. Now you can chew on it. You can come up with a plan A, a plan B, and maybe even a plan C that will make good, sound business sense without caving in to the expensive school of hard knocks of letting your heart control your business decisions. If you get stuck, run it by one of your fellow investors. Many times over the years, this strategy of calling myself the person who works for the property manager has saved the day and saved me money. When my office manager stumbles into a hairy situation, she knows she can always dodge the bullet at hand by saying she'll have to check with the owner first and get back to you. When this occurs, it allows her the opportunity to research any information needed and to consult with me for a plan or plans of action. Sometimes she hits a bullseye and has the answer, and sometimes we discover the old saying, "Two heads are better than one," and develop a battle plan or solution that is less devastating than a quick knee-jerk answer from a landlord on the phone. Education has always been a big part of my investing career. As part of our local investment group and a charter member of our local chapter of the National Association of Residential Property Managers, I've had the opportunity, or curse, to participate in meetings involving representatives and leaders of local government agencies involving housing. Look how they play the game. Never will they commit to any plan of action while sitting at the table during the meeting. Always, always their knee-jerk answer to everything is to get with the director, the boss, or even the mayor to make sure a suggestion or plan can be put into action. They always get back to us, but they never position themselves as having all the authority needed to make a decision on the spot. We should learn to do the same. As a property manager, we can submit a proposal to the owner for approval. This permits us, the owner, to chew on it, brainstorm, and run all of the what-if scenarios out to the fullest. Always a property manager, never a landlord. But, my tenants already know me as their landlord. Guess what? I had this very same experience. Your solution is simple. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Let's do it here, too. Let me point out that you do not have to create any new legal entities, LLCs, or corporations to conquer this challenge. Almost every one of us began our real estate investing career in contemplating the name for our real estate business. After a while, you came up with a name for your pride and joy. First, you could send a letter by snail mail, email, and text to all of your residents informing them that the XYZ property management company has taken over and is their new landlord. Let them know that all rent payments, repair requests, and all other correspondence shall be sent to the XYZ property management company. Sure, this can be brutal in the beginning, but stick to it and you will win. Your tenants will win, and you will also learn about those tenants who badmouth you when you were their landlord. I would also encourage your residents to go to your website when they need to contact the office. Now you have set the stage to get a date and time, and in your residents' own words on all correspondence from them. Also highlight that your XYZ Property Management's website is open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. The transition is the hardest part. In fact, I still have many tenants today who knew I was the boss man or the rent man, as some would say. Keep in mind, this chapter is not how to operate as a property manager. This is simply an article on how to present yourself to your residents and to be perceived by others as a person who works for the property manager. We have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Use it to your advantage. The small exception on this one subject and challenge involves your local landlord-tenant laws. If similar to ours, you cannot dodge the label landlord or tenant. You must use these titles properly on all of your forms, especially when taking legal action, such as an eviction action. The property manager title is simply a term to identify yourself and setting the stage to pass the buck and avoid the challenge of making a decision right now because you have the authority to do so. There are just so many benefits for you to calling yourself a property manager versus a landlord. Nip in the bud any misunderstanding of the word and title property manager. First of all, this is simply a word, a title for you to identify yourself to your tenants and others involved in your landlording business. In no way am I encouraging you to market yourself as a professional property manager or anything close to it. Property manager in general means someone who manages property for others for a fee. Most states will require property managers to be a licensed real estate broker or an agent at minimum. Don't freak out over this requirement if you're not licensed. Just understand and accept because you call yourself a property manager, you're probably not in a legal position to manage properties for others for a fee. There is absolutely no problem with you managing properties you own. You could identify yourself as landlord, boss, rent man, rent lady, landlady, hey you, Mr. Smith, or anything you choose, including, and preferably, property manager. Use the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid, and don't make it complicated for yourself. Here's what I'm talking about. With all of the information today encouraging investors to protect your little empire, most of us implement some kind of asset protection program to protect and help with taxes as well. In my case, for example, I have a C-Corp, which is my property management company, and my dealer. My property management company manages property owned by several of my limited liability companies. All of these are still mine, therefore I do not need to be licensed. If I wanted to manage property for other investors and their entities of ownership, I would have to be a licensed real estate broker in my state to charge a fee for this service. The point is, it is safe to call yourself a property manager if you manage properties you own and control. Never call yourself a landlord again. Now you work for the property manager, and you must follow company policies and procedures. You do not have the authority to do squat. Resources needed. Here's how to go paperless and all digital. Gmail, Google Voice and Texts, ACR, cell phone app, all call recording, interactive website with fill-in-the-blank forms. Chapter 5. Are tenants your customers? I frequently get to speak and train real estate investors all over the place. When teaching landlording, I always ask for a show of hands on who thinks, are tenants your customers? Almost every time, about 2/3 of the room raises their hand. Then I ask them to help me say the famous retail slogan, the customer is always right. Now replace the word customer with the word tenant and say this slogan again. The tenant is always... Uh-oh. Now they all have their deer-in-the-headlights look. Confusion. Everyone is fast on their feet to say tenants are not always right. So if they are not your customers, then what are they, relationship-wise? May I suggest trying the word employees on for size and see how this word fits? Good employees have responsibilities. Good employees make you money. Good employees you want to keep forever. Good employees must be rewarded. Good employees must have training. Bad employees get retrained or fired. Evicted. Doesn't this look and sound more appropriate? We're only talking about having the right mindset. This has nothing to do with the legal or tax concerns, just old-fashioned relationships. Therefore, if you treat your tenants as employees, this means you are their employer or their boss. And yes, the boss has responsibilities as well. Why the 1960s TV show Leave It to Beaver is important. This old TV show is the best example of how to treat your residents in a typical rental property. If you own or operate A-plus super almost luxury rental properties with top-dollar rents, you can bump this up a notch or two. If you have never seen this TV show from the 1960s, just go to YouTube and search for Leave It to Beaver. You'll find a boatload of the 20-minute shows. Watch a few of them and you will grasp what I am sharing with you. The Andy Griffith Show and the Brady Bunch are good examples as well. First, think of Wally, Beaver, Eddie Haskell, and Lumpy or Larry as your tenants. Now imagine yourself as Mom and Dad, June and Ward Cleaver. In these shows, you will see how Wally and the Beaver get involved in things that are not good. They find themselves in a pickle. Sounds like tenants, right? These situations usually involve a conversation with Mom and Dad, June or Ward Cleaver. It is very important to watch how Ward and June treat Wally, Beaver, and their buddies. They do not raise their voice, they do not cuss, and always offer some guidance to solve and prevent their pickle of the day. Huge lessons learned and just good old-fashioned family values. In almost every situation where your tenant is in a pickle, you must let them know this pickle is their problem. After they share their problem with you, then put on your Ward or June Cleaver hat and give your tenant some guidance in how to solve or remedy their pickle of the day, along with your simple version of pickle prevention. This also includes any repair request on your rental property. You must let them know they have a problem, and you are going to help them solve their problem. For example, they contact your office reporting the kitchen sink will not drain. When you contact them, let them know you have received their message about their problem of the sink not draining. Tell them you're going to help solve their problem. Plus, use this same Ward and June Cleaver concept in dealing with every issue your tenant may have. Here are a couple of examples. Late charges happen because of the tenant's behavior. Evictions. Never tell your tenant you will file an eviction notice. Always tell your tenant that you, Wally and Beaver, will cause their own eviction because they have not paid their rent. With negative things, never say, I'm gonna. Replace it with, Wally, you are going to cause this or that to happen. Your rental application becomes a job application. Try this attitude. The next time you give a prospective tenant your rental application, change your mindset and try to view this application as a prospective employee. Suppose you owned a manufacturing plant and it takes 43 people trained properly to operate the line. For whatever reason, a position is vacant and you need to fill it quickly. You hand out your job application, review it quickly, call the applicants with the good news and instruct them to meet you. You sign the papers quickly, perhaps on the kitchen counter or worse yet, on the hood of your truck, and point them to their station, your rental unit. How will this new employee respond? What will they do? They will bring all of their past experiences and knowledge from their previous jobs, rental units, and might try to do the best they can, giving them benefit of our doubt. If they fail and perform poorly, whose fault is it? Perhaps they rented from very low-quality landlords, worked in below-average jobs. While in high school, I got a part-time job as a bag boy at a Winn-Dixie grocery store. One would think this is a simple, no-brainer job just sacking groceries. Absolutely not. They treated it like it was a level or two below brain surgery. I had to watch training videos, go through manuals, exercises, and practice in the back, out of view of customers before I graduated to performing the real job at the front of the store. I don't recall exactly, but I'm guessing I had at least a good 6 hours of training before I was cut loose to bag groceries. How many hours do you spend with your qualified applicant, reviewing paperwork, responsibilities of both parties, you and the tenant, about your policies before you give them the key to your investment property? You may have invested $50,000 or $100,000 or more in your rental property, and because I've been guilty of this too, you're not alone here, meet them in a McDonald's parking lot or at the vacant unit with an attitude of hurry up, sign here, give me the money, and here's your keys. I can't tell you how many times when I got started I did stupid things like this. Perhaps I was in a hurry to meet Mama and my kids for supper, and I thought by doing this real quick on the way home from work, I'd get an extra day's rent. I really don't have any real excuses for operating in this manner, other than thinking and believing I didn't have time. I was dumb and stupid. I'm giving the keys to a tenant who's gonna live in my investment. We ought to spend at least 6 hours with them before they get the keys, so we all start off on the same page together. We both should know what to do and what the consequences are with failing to perform properly. This has made a huge difference in our operation. This paper signing and procedures before giving them the keys is referred to as rent talk. There is a chapter on this process later in this book. We allow a minimum of 1 hour to do the paperwork before a tenant receives keys to their home. Rent Talk is an 11-minute video for your new and renewing tenants to watch. Think of it as a new tenant orientation. You can use it for renewing residents, too. In fact, a few years ago, while viewing the Rent Talk new tenant orientation, an approved applicant politely told my resident manager this was simply too much for them, and they made the decision, on the spot, to back out and not rent our unit. What a blessing. Wouldn't you rather have this happen now than to discover you've rented to a dirtbag after they're already in your property? Having a mindset of tenants as your employees allows you the opportunity to have tenant reward programs. Tenants can earn discounted and free rent with long-term consistent performance on their part. This, too, is explained with the All-Star program. Don't keep this focus on tenants only. Spread it around. How about your own help? Office staff and maintenance staff should be treated as highly valuable employees. Your furnace person, electrician, plumber, roofer, lawn service provider, painter, carpet installer, carpenter, and so on. Here is an absolutely powerful and cheap way to reward your employees. Most investors I know have had a job or still have a job today. For those of you who are unemployable, go back with me for a moment to the days of punching a time clock. What about the holiday season? Your opportunity to shine as a leader. Think of the holiday season. From Thanksgiving to the end of the year, what happened to those folks, including myself, who have jobs in government or the corporate world? Holiday parties and more holiday parties were offered for the police unit I worked for, along with invitations to holiday parties for all of the other police districts. It was almost a competition atmosphere about who could throw the most extravagant holiday party. The bragging rights for the best holiday bash usually went to the police district, who had live entertainment, a dance floor, a huge hall, plenty of food, booze, beer, and even limousines. Sounds great, doesn't it? Switch gears with me here for a moment. While I worked my full-time job as a police officer and observed all of the free holiday events for me and my wife, I happened to hit the pause button and reflect on the holiday happenings of those who are valuable to me in my real estate investments. Remember my furnace person, electrician, plumber, garage killer, and so on? Most of these folks have mom-and-pop operations. That's why we use them, because they're usually cheaper than the ones who have the full-page ads in the Yellow Pages. What are they doing during the holidays, and where are they going? Do they get invitations to any holiday bashes? I guess some do if their spouse has a job somewhere. Here's what I do every year for my vendors, contractors, resident managers, including electricians, heating and air, plumbers, tree service, insurance agent, banker, attorney, window and doors, roofer, lawn service, pest control, concrete, my real estate agents in-house, and the sheriff's deputies who serve the set-out warrants, and all those who are an integral part of my real estate business. For the last several years, I reserve the private lower-level banquet room at a nice local Mexican restaurant for the Saturday before Christmas. We mail homemade full-page simple invitations to the annual Vista Holiday Bash from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. They can bring their spouse or significant other of the month. This banquet room also has a small bar, and we include an open bar as part of this annual holiday event. We've never had any issues of anyone abusing the open bar. In fact, my experience is just the opposite. These folks are not used to the extravagant holiday bashes in their honor and are very, very appreciative of this event to benefit them for free. In fact, every year they try to pay the bartender for their drinks and are amazed when the bartender waves his hand and says, "No charge." The restaurant has a buffet style of presenting the food on regular tables in raised foil pans and candles underneath to keep the food hot. Nothing fancy. Pick and choose what you want and how much. From tortilla chips and hot cheese dip to beans, chicken, beef, and soft flour tortillas along with several vegetables and sauces. This covers almost everyone's food tastes, including vegetarians, making me politically correct again. Good music, fun, food, and drink set the stage for these folks to network and have a good time. I usually take the floor around 7 p.m. or so and introduce each and every vendor by name, along with their product or service, and a very lighthearted, humorous story on each person. This is powerful. It allows each person, especially the guys, to be made proud and a hero. It also makes their spouses grin from ear to ear, recognizing their man as an expert in his field. I'm fortunate to have a garage killer who has outrageous stories, and he usually grows into the center of attention before the night is all over. As an additional bonus, my daughter has a friend who has a passion and is obsessed with Houdini. In fact, this kid changed his name to Aaron Houdini. I hire him for a very small fee, and he puts on an outrageous interactive magic show with everybody. I also pretty much force my resident office manager and my technical services supervisor, Bobby, to take the floor and make some comments. Nothing scripted, just take the floor, wing it, and say some good things. Usually it's just good, old-fashioned, thank you for all of your help and patience throughout the year. My intention is to make our resident manager and maintenance supervisor feel like they're hosting this event, as they pretty much drive the entire operation on a day-to-day basis. As they take the floor and make their heebie-jeebie speech with a little stage-fright comments, they're very proud and honored. It shows, and their spouses just grin from ear to ear. You can't measure personal rewards and benefits like this in any bank account. These folks come from all backgrounds and dress accordingly. My electrician starts talking about this annual event in June of each year and said his wife really looks forward to it, even though she's not much fun. His words, not mine. Okay, now the bad news. This annual event costs approximately $800 total. That's right. Room, food, booze, and tip for the waiter and bartender. Believe it or not, this is a nice restaurant just two blocks from my office. The rewards and paybacks can't be measured in money. Your benefit from the annual holiday bash. Guess where you will be on their list of valued customers. I'm willing to bet Vista, my company, is probably at the top of their list. I might not be the biggest, but I'm probably one of their best. We've had a rash of horrible storms and tornadoes recently, and guess where my tree guy put me on the list of next in line? I didn't even have to call him. He called me at 6 a.m. asking where to go first. In addition to the great business relationships this kind of event promotes, it makes me feel like $1 million to see the wonderful feeling of appreciation and value of the skills, trades, and workmanship of these folks. Several vendors told me no one has ever done this for them and their spouses before. This is a great way to let those who make your business successful know that you really appreciate them, their work, and relationship. Not only doing a good job for you, they're a walking, talking billboard for your business by referring tenants, sellers, loan customers, and so forth. Work on this one now and start planning for your own event for this holiday season. I'd like to hear how your event works for you. Here is a helpful list of those to consider. Invite your bankers, furnace person, electrician, plumber, carpenter, lawn service, resident managers, office manager, bookkeeper, CPA, attorneys, siding and gutter person, tree service, pest control, roofer, insurance agent, highly valued real estate agent, auto mechanic, Section 8 inspectors, helpful service clerks at local hardware store, paint store, supply house, newspaper for your classified ads, your painter, garage killer, trash and junk hauler, and the person who lets you place your dumpster in his rear parking lot for free, and those law enforcement folks who help you out throughout the year. Even if they don't attend, the simple goodwill invitation to your party is worth a lot. This is just a small list to assist you in identifying those who might be important links in your strong real estate chain. So remember, good employees are a good thing and make your life easier and more profitable. Section 2. Before you give keys to your new resident. Chapter 6. Never show a vacant unit again. Here's how you can allow prospective tenants to view your vacant rental without you being present and how you can get them to fill out an application at the same time. 1. For starters, you must be set up properly. 2. You must have an effective interactive website with A. your vacant unit displayed with photos and details on your home page, B. online fill-in-the-blank rental application, 3. yard sign, 4. double-locking key lockbox. These have two locks built into them. The first lock secures it in place and it cannot be removed without the access code. The second lock holds the key. It has its own unique access code. 5. Smartphone. This is the bare minimum to get started. Here is how it works. A person drives down the street and sees your awesome yard sign in front of your beautiful rental. They are looking for a new home to rent. They stop their car and may get out of the car and walk around your rental home. They like what they see so far and look to your yard sign on how to contact somebody to see your rental. In the old days, they would call the phone number. The landlord answers the phone, drops everything, and treats this appointment like a 5-alarm fire. The landlord busts his butt to go as quickly as possible to the rental to meet this prospective interested future tenant. Most of the time, the landlord arrives, but the hoped-for tenant is gone. Never again use this system. New way. Your prospect takes a look at your yard sign to find a way to get more information on your rental. Here are several ways you can make this simple. The simplest way. 1. They call the number on your yard sign. 2. You answer the phone, I recommend a dedicated free Google voice number, and quiz them quickly. You can even give them your basic qualifying standards, such as, is your income 3 times or more the monthly rent? You must have a favorable rental history. You must have a favorable credit history. 3. If they pass your simple quiz, then ask for their name, cell phone number, and email address. 4. Then have them take 2 photos and text or email them to you. Photo 1, have them take a clear, sharp photo of their driver's license or their valid photo ID. Photo 2, have them take a selfie with your rental in the background. This proves to you they are actually in front of your rental. 5. Once you receive the required information, you can give the access code for your hidden key lockbox. 6. Now they can view the interior of your rental without anyone breathing down their neck or watching over their shoulder. 7. If they are interested and want to submit an application, you simply text them the link to your online rental application. You could text them something like, "Here you go, Ralph. Click this link to our online rental application. yourwebsite.com/application. Straightforward, simple, and it works. To polish it and make it better, you can make them pay your application fee before they get your online rental application. But, Mike, what if they trash my rental or steal stuff? Please stop your attitude now. Many investors are doing this all over America. It is simple and it works. Think about it. Do you really think after giving you their name, ID, phone number, and email that they are going to trash your unit or steal stuff? The odds of this happening are slim to none. It's the folks who do not contact you who you should worry about. But, Mike, they have my access code for the key. It's okay. Take a chill pill. Now let's take a quick peek at the old way. Do you really want to wait for your fire alarm to respond promptly to show your rental when someone calls? Or schedule appointment times for an open house? The new system works. This is how you can kill 2 birds with 1 rock. The first bird shows you how to never show a vacant unit again. The second bird is getting your rental application to them by using your online rental application on your website. Here are some tips to make it even better. Because I have a real office, prospects must come to our office and sign out a key. They complete a simple 1-page key sign-out form, which includes their contact information, including their current address. Then we make a copy of their driver's license or valid photo ID, and they must put up a $20 key deposit. The deposit is returned to them when they return with the key. In my rental property system, I use Ernie Riddle's LandlordLocks.com and have a dedicated stainless steel cylinder used exclusively on the front door of vacant homes. They are given this key to see the inside of a home. If they do not return the key, we just made $19 because each key from Ernie only costs about $1. Okay, so you may be thinking if they do not return the key, they have access to your vacant units. You're right. However, please remember they have completed the key sign-out and provided us with a copy of their valid photo ID. FYI, I have never had any problems using this system. It works. Next question about my system. But, Mike, what if my rental is on the other side of town and it would be very inconvenient for them to travel to my office? My answer is awesome. Why? Because I do not want tire kickers or wannabes. It's very easy for them to sit in front of your rental, call you on the phone, and make you jump right now to let them in to see the inside of your home. Baloney! This system in my business makes them take a serious step in wanting to view this home. On my website, there is a page titled FAQ, and it lists the answers to all of the frequently asked questions. Here's the answer on how to see a home. Here's what they will see on my website. How can I see a Vista rental home? You can see a Vista rental home anytime you choose. Here's how. 1. Visit our office. 2. Sign out a key. That's it. Take your time, check out your potential future home, and with confidence, you can return the key, fill out an application, and capture the home you want. Question. When can I see the home? Answer. Anytime you want. Question. How can I see it? Answer. This easy-to-see-a-home program has been designed for you. Have you ever checked out other homes and houses for rent while a leasing agent or landlord is standing there or following you through the home? Isn't this just absolutely nerve-wracking on your part? You're trying to evaluate this house because it will become your home. Don't you want to take your time, walk through the house, think about placing your furniture, rooms for your family members, laundry, yard size, neighborhood, and whatever else is a concern for you? You should be concerned about making the right decision for this house to become your home. Vista wants you to make the right decision. Here's the story. How your big benefit was created. How to make an appointment to see a home before submitting your application. Have you ever gone to see a home and found a landlord standing there watching you, following you room to room, trying to listen to your comments and eyeing you up, evaluating you as a possible tenant? Isn't it horrible? Makes you feel like you have to walk through the house quick and get out of there, doesn't it? Even worse, have you ever been told, "Meet me there at 5 p.m., only to find out that you and three other folks who want the same house are also there at 5 p.m.? Ugly. Now you really have to go fast to beat out the others, and you might really not like the house, but simply got caught up in the excitement to beat the other folks. Vista has a special program just for you. Because you've been there and done that, Vista's key sign-out program has benefits just for you. Allows you to take your time. Check out your future home at your leisure. Imagine where you'll put your furniture, sofa, kitchen table, and chairs. Check out the yard and the neighborhood. This might be your home. We want you to make the right decision for you. It's not much fun feeling pressure with somebody breathing down your back or following you around room to room asking if you like it, being put under the gun to make a fast and quick decision. If you want these benefits and more, check out your home. Vista has one simple, easy step for you. Simply sign out a key. Now you've got it straight from the horse's mouth to have a better understanding of this true benefit for you. Give us a call now. We'll have your key ready for you to sign out. Got a quick question or short message? Simply text 502-896-2595. Old school. Submitting the application is your first critical step. These first couple of contacts with an applicant are so very critical. You must be on your toes. You must make sure you comply with all of the rules and regulations involved in this business. Not too much concern if you're doing this for yourself, but as you graduate into real, true autopilot landlording, you will delegate this stuff to someone who represents you and your business. This can be a tad bit overwhelming at times. I don't care where we get started here. Let's pretend we are at the vacant unit, showing it to a prospect, and they acknowledge they wish to fill out an application. You pull out the one-page, two-sided, simple, fill-in-the-blank rental application and instruct your applicant to, "Please fill out this entire rental application completely, and remember we need your signature and date on the backside, too." If an applicant wishes to leave your property with your application, don't worry. This is okay. I used to almost freak out and say, "No, you can't leave with my application." This is what I was instructed to do by many gurus years ago. Once again, no need to worry. Here's what I've discovered. I will bend over backward to help good tenants. What I'm talking about is perhaps the Larrys and Daryls of the world. Just like the old Bob Newhart show and his hotel maintenance crew, Larry and Daryl weren't very bright. They were still good people. You may find this a bit hard to swallow, but there are still many great, wonderful people in our society today who cannot read or write and would still be excellent long-term tenants. Their request to take your application with them to complete it at home just might be their way of concealing their inability to read and write. Knowing this today, I would never refuse to allow an applicant to take a rental application home with them. Okay, back to the ones who can read and write. Turning in the application. You handed them an application form and instructed them in a calm voice to fill out the application completely. If you have an office, make a copy of their valid photo ID and enlarge it.